Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tatis launches that one to deep left center field. Marte Peralta looking gone. A home run for Fernando Tatis Jr. His second against Kelly. And a two-run shot doubles the lead, 4-0 here in the third.
Fernando Tatis Jr. with the home run right there. It's okay. It's all right, White Sox fans. You needed James Shields. It's okay. That's not even fair to say, though, and I'll tell you why. Because that's the moment that Rick Hahn looks back on when he's angrily saying, "We're mired in mediocrity," in the dugout later on that year. I think it was later on that year. He's regretting that that trade even happened. So they would not have changed gears. They would not have changed lanes or shifted gears, however you want to say it, if that trade had not happened. Perhaps some small solace for the White Sox as you watch Fernando Tatis Jr. bloom out there in San Diego. Let's talk to a guy we love talking baseball with. He is Scott Miller, who writes MLB for Bleacher Report and also for Fox Sports San Diego and is a Sirius XM MLB analyst as well. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. So how does Tatis Jr. look overall as you've gotten a chance to see him and cover him a bit?
You want me to sugarcoat it for your White Sox fans, or you want me to give it to you straight?
Give it, you know, man, it's been a rough go. Other than watching Moncada break out a little bit and Tim Anderson hit well and Eloy with the two homers, overall it's been a rough go. They can take it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Tatis Jr. is, you know, he's rocketed up the charts in the last year, of course, to, you know, all the people that do the minor league rankings, you know, to the point where over this winter, a couple people had him number one over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And, you know, you can certainly see why, and that's no knock against Vladdy Jr. You know, who knows whenever the Jays decide to call him up, I'm sure we'll see some special things from him. But, you know, Tatis Jr., I mean, offensively and defensively both, he's the 5-tool player. He can run. His arm is terrific. You know, I'm sure he'll run into some, you know, there'll be some, you know, early career adjustments he'll have to make as pitchers figure out where his holes are. But so far, you know, offensively, he's hit a few big home runs. Defensively, you know, he's the Padres might have, I can't imagine a better, tighter, more fun infield to watch defensively. I mean, you know, Machado is incredible at third base. Fernando Tatis Jr. is really, really good at shortstop. He goes back and makes those plays on balls in the hole between short and third like Jeter used to. You know, the backhanded play, deep edge of the outfield grass, come up jumping and wheeling and throwing to first base. You know, terrific arm. You know, you got him and Machado at third, and Eric Hosmer is a Gold Glover at first, and, you know, Ian Kinsler has been at second. He was a Gold Glover last year. Not much gets through, and Tatis has been, you know, he's been a lot of fun to watch.
So what is there to be learned, you think, overall from what the Padres have done here in saying, you know what, screw the service time, let's roll. We might be good enough. Let's give our guys a chance. And I know some veterans were the ones that went to A.J. Preller, right, and said, hey, let's go ahead and do this. So is there something to be learned from it if you dovetail it with all the extensions that a lot of the young players are signing well before their free agency?
I think the biggest thing to be learned is just you have to keep an open mind, and you can't, you know, it's bad business practice, I believe, to not ever deviate from what you think the business handbook of baseball says you should do. You know, there may be, you know, not every situation is like the one in San Diego. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there are any number of rookies that, that maybe aren't ready for the prime time, you know, no matter how big of a spring they have, and maybe, you know, maybe shouldn't necessarily break the camp with the team. But in this case, you know, as you said, a couple of veterans like Hosmer Machado talked to the general manager and said, you know, we love this kid. We need him. And the Padres listened. And I think a couple things. One, you know, he just turned 20 in early January, so he's still just a baby. But in terms of the Padres making the decision to keep him rather than, you know, even do like what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant a few years ago, where the one is his development also was sped up last winter in the Dominican Winter League. You know, when he played for his father, Fernando Tatis Sr. was the manager, and their small hometown team in the Dominican, they won the championship, and they broke a 51-year curse, or whatever you want to call it. It was a big deal, and Tatis Jr. told me this spring that because it was their hometown, because his father was manager, you know, every game in the playoffs felt like the World Series. So he locked in, and that helped his development, I think, at the, you know, identifying the strike zone, for example, making sure to not go outside of the strike zone at the plate swinging at pitches. He was so locked in at bat after at bat. So I think, you know, that makes him a little different than maybe some of the other top prospect that people debate in the spring, should he break camp with the team or not. I think last winter really helped exacerbate things for Tatis. You know, secondly, if you send this has kind of gotten lost in the mix, and I would doubt we're going to see Tatis Jr. sent to the minors, but, you know, I mean, barring some kind of crazy slump. But that whole service time thing, my understanding, and I've checked with some people on this, the Padres could still pull that on him. In other words, he opened the season with the team, and say we get to May or June, and he was really floundering. Well, if they sent him back to the minor leagues, which obviously now it looks like they won't, but if they sent him down for however, you know, 3 weeks or a month, that would still extend their control over him. In other words, you don't have to open the season in the minors, you know, for the first 3 weeks of the season. If you get sent down later in your rookie year, that serves the same purpose from a business standpoint.
This hour of The Score is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. And the bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight division title. Be there today at 4 for the last regular season home game. First 1,000 kids receive free admission to Raging Waves Water Park. For tickets or playoff info, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Scott, do you have any idea why the Red Sox gave Chris Sale so much money when his velocity was decaying last year and was also decaying in spring training, and now here we are in the season and it's looking bad now? Do we know why they gave him that money?
Yeah, I mean, other than they maybe just thought that you know, it wasn't as big of a problem as it looks like it might be. You know, I mean, part of it's reward, right? You win a World Series. You fall in love with your guys that helped you win a World Series. You know, just like, you know, I mean, I thought Nathan Eovaldi earned that contract, free agent contract he got from the Red Sox, you know, with his work in that 17-inning World Series game. I mean, talk about, you know, guts and selflessness. You know, here Eovaldi was going to be a free agent, and you know, he easily could have told Alex Cora, look, I'm only pitching a couple innings, you know, I there's no way I'm going to risk my career, especially, you know, here's a guy that had arm issues in the past, he was going to be a free agent. And what he did, you know, I thought good for the Red Sox giving Eovaldi that contract. And you know, it might be apples and oranges, Eovaldi and Sale, but again, you know, you win a World Series, you know, the emotions running high, and, you know, the Red Sox won last year, you know, large part with pitching. I mean, Sale, Rick Porcello, David Price, these, you know, Dombrowski's teams in the past, by the way, Dave Dombrowski, the president of baseball operations for the Red Sox, you know, he came to Boston from Detroit where he had, you know, his rotation, you know, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, David Price. So, I mean, Dombrowski is one of those old-time, old-school baseball guys that believes the opposite of what, you know, we're starting to see now. He believes rotation is where it starts. You win with pitching. Mm-hmm. You need stud workhorses in the rotation. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the future, but he may have swung and missed on the Sale extension.
He is Scott Miller from Bleacher Report. Scott, I know you're co-author of a book with Bob Tewksbury, who I'm looking forward to getting to know now that he's here in Chicago working with the Cubs. And, boy, the mental skills department seems to have their hands full with you, Darvish. I'm wondering... Right? I mean, like, the non-judgmental way to say it, or I should say the amenable way to say it, is not to call him weak or not to call him soft or anything like that, but sensitive. It is undeniably fair, in my opinion, to call him a sensitive guy who thinks about a lot of stuff and can be overwhelmed, can be bothered by some things. So has that been known around baseball for a long, long time?
To a degree. I mean, you know, his best years obviously were in Texas. He was, you know, especially once he moved a little past the stage where he, you know, all pitchers, they're, you know, elite pitchers like Darvish and Chris Sale and whoever else, there's this window in their career where they can just get by on stuff, right? The stuff is so good, doesn't matter. You know, just throw your fastball, spot your pitches, whatever your secondary stuff is, you're going to dominate. But that window, I think, is, you know, the average fan, I think, would find it surprising that that window's short, where you just get by on stuff and nothing else, you know. And then comes, it starts to erode a little bit, and your stuff is still maybe really good. But you need to rely on some other things too, you know, like, you know, good game plans, smart approaches. You know, you have to be creative. Maybe your fastball is not quite as good on Tuesday, so you got to rely more on your secondary stuff. Then the next outing, maybe the secondary stuff isn't quite as good. You got to go back to your fastball. In other words, it's the old thinking man's game, and that's where the mental toughness comes in.
Yeah.
And I think Darvish in Texas, there was a period where he could rely on that stuff, but that's long gone. And you're right, sensitive is probably a very polite and nice way to put it. You know, toward the end of his Texas run and his time in Los Angeles, yeah, I mean, it was not necessarily a secret that this is a high-maintenance guy, that you need a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to him. And, you know, I thought, you know, boy, when the Cubs gave him 6 years, to me, it was a case of, okay, maybe the analytics side of things says this, but the human relations part of that six-year deal, I'm not sure that as much thought went into that as into the other, because I thought that six-year deal from the beginning could be trouble.
You know what I think it is, Scott? I think
what's that?
They have an arrogance, and it's been justified a lot of times through the years, about what they can do in terms of game planning, what they can do in terms of figuring out. I mean, they fixed Jake Arrieta. They fixed Pedro Strop. They fixed and then swapped guys like Paul Mahalam when they were like doing sign-in flips there for a while. Mm-hmm. They've helped Kyle Hendricks develop into what he has been. And I think they believed, like you're saying, they could have Darvish rely on more of his pitches and, you know, really do it with sequence and game planning. They thought that they could get to him in that way, and I don't think it's happened yet.
No, and the key word, I think, I agree with everything you said. The key word is the last word you said, yet. 6 years,
yeah.
There's the rest of this year and then four more to go. The question is going to become, is the word yet going to come into play, or is Darvish just going to be a guy that is not fixable in that regard? I mean, you're right, there's a lot of sensitivity. There's a lot of self-doubt. I go back to, you know, I was in Texas's camp the spring he signed, and I was there right as pitchers and catchers reported. I was there Darvish's very first days in the Texas camp. You know, I did a big feature on him. His parents were there, and I remember talking to his mom clearly, and and she expressed concern about all the pressure that was on Darvish. And at the time, I thought, well, you know, that's sweet, and that's a normal mother's reaction. You know, I mean, you know, most moms are going to be like, oh, geez, you know, the, you know, my son signs a huge contract, and everybody looks like he's a savior coming in to for the Texas Rangers. And boy, you know, the mom typically worries, right, about you know, all the pressure on her son. And at the time, I just kind of thought that well, it's a typical mom. But I go back to that day periodically when I'm thinking about Darvish or maybe writing about Darvish and thinking, here's a guy that had already established himself as one of the best, probably the best pitcher at the time in Japan.
Yeah.
Then he comes over here. Again, cultural change. It's going to be natural for a mother to worry. But with all he had already accomplished, I think back to that day sometimes. I think, you know, maybe that might have been more than a mother's, you know, typical worry. It might have been a mother who knows how fragile her son is.
Yeah, interesting. Scott, great stuff. Fun to talk to you. Last thing for you. I know you've seen a lot of it, and I hope our listeners have seen Ramon Laureano make throws from center field for the Oakland A's. It is as good of an outfield arm as I can remember, and I find myself thinking about some of the guys I loved. I'll give you two. I'll give you Dwight Evans and Jesse Barfield. Give me a couple outfield arms that are even up there with what Ramon Laureano has, because his accuracy is what's outrageous to me as well.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I would go, you know, I the two you mentioned are really good names. You know, I'd throw Dave Parker into the mix, the Cobra from back in his Pittsburgh Pirates days. You know, the guy that we haven't seen it as much lately, but when he first came to the Dodgers in 2013, Yasiel Puig had an arm like that, although it was never as accurate as Laureano's. You know, Puig, that arm was like it was like the baseball coming from a rocket into third base from right field with Puig. But again, Puig was more wild. The strength was there. The impressive arm was there. But sometimes it was accurate, and it would make you go, wow.
Yeah.
Other times, you know, he'd miss cutoff man because he loved to throw so much. But, you know, Parker would be one. But you're right. Laureano, anybody listening, if you haven't seen much of the Oakland A's, you know, dial him up. Some of his throws are on the internet, or watch the A's play. However you do it, this guy is unbelievable.
Yes, he is. Thank you, Scott. Pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Likewise. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.